just like a parent in love requires certain things from us. He asks us not to do certain things. But it's not because, I mean, how many here are parents? How many here are parents? I'm a dad, 3 boys, 5 and under. And I discipline, I set out rules for them, not because I want to make life difficult, but because I want to see their life be better. And it's the exact same thing with God. And so we're going to talk about this evening about how God is a caring God, and we're going to expand a little bit beyond that. We're going to see how God's compassion, how God is compassion. God is compassionate. Do you know that? He's a compassionate, loving God. And how it can impact our lives. The truth is, people all around us, maybe you right now, you're struggling. You're dealing with hurt in your life. You're dealing with pain. I'm sure you know someone who is having family trouble, maybe money trouble, maybe relational issues. There might be someone, well, we know someone, we were just talking about them, the pastor from New Richmond, that's where I was born 33 years ago, and 1985, and that's how young I am. The pastor dealing with a serious illness, or there's many areas in the world where they face natural disasters or human-made disasters. We are praying for the 2 Muslim mosques that were hit. I mean, there's just all around us, there's pain. There's people wrestling with depression, people that don't feel loved, people that maybe don't feel like there's any way out or any way forward. If we're honest, all around us, there's people that are struggling to some degree. I'm going to show you some images, and I want to know how you react to them. So when you see this image, what sort of emotions come to mind? What was that? Caring? Sadness? Devastation? What about this one? What comes to mind? Cold? Loss? What about this image? What comes to your mind? What emotions? Sadness? Desperation, that is a good one. I wonder if we saw these people in real life, if we encountered them on the sidewalk or going through a grocery store, if we were sitting in a coffee shop, we went to a foreign country, if they were sitting beside you in the pew, I wonder how would we react to them? Would we take any sort of action at all? If we're honest, our compassion towards those in need can fluctuate based upon our moods, our busyness, how we may feel about the individual if they drive us a little nuts. Sometimes our compassion can be short-lived. I mean, you look at stories that go through the media, we feel bad for them one moment, and then the next thing comes along, and we're like, oh, that political decision, and that comes into our mind, and we forget about the people that are suffering. As we go through our message this evening, we're going to learn how compassion is a part of God's character. It's a part of who He is. What we'll see is how it works, or it should work itself out in our world, in our lives. So, what is compassion? Can someone define compassion? Putting aside your discomfort to offer comfort to someone else. Anyone else want to take a shot of it? Or do you just want me to keep trucking? Having a heart to feel what someone else is going to, relating to them. Putting yourself in someone else's place, someone else's shoes. Absolutely. There's so many different ways to define compassion. Really, at the end of the day, it needs to be more than just a definition, more than just words. But what it comes down to is responding to someone else's needs, understanding where someone else is at, and not just understanding, but, as I already said, responding. How is God compassionate? Can you think of any ways of how God is compassionate? Maybe an example of God's compassion in your own life. Giving you peace.
Yeah.
Miraculous peace at times. How's God been compassionate to you? Loving me even when I'm not lovable. Man, the amount of times that I don't deserve his love, and yet I still can sense it. It's crazy love. He identifies with us, absolutely. His faithfulness. When we're talking about God's compassion, we're talking about the mercy and the goodness that he shows to those in need. If we look at Psalm 86, verse 15, it says, "But you, O Lord, are compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness." The thing I want you to see, well, there's a few things really. There's a few truths about God that we need to understand. I want you to see that God, at the end of the day, is compassionate and gracious. God is a patient God. He is a God that is full of love, and he's always going to be faithful. At the end of the day, that's who he is. That is the nature of God. At our core, apart from God, if we try to find ourselves, I think most of us can say that those attributes aren't always defining for us. I'll be the first one to admit that patience doesn't always come naturally to me. Sometimes my 5-year-old, my 2-year-old, and my 9-month-old, especially at like 4 a.m. in the morning, can drive me a little crazy. And I don't really have as much patience until I get a little bit of coffee in me. And then all of a sudden, patience comes a little bit more. Patience isn't always loving and caring someone, being compassionate and gracious towards people. That isn't always a defining characteristics in us. Sure, we know the fruits of the Spirit, especially if we've been around the church a long time, but it's different. There's a difference between knowing it and allowing it to be defining in our lives. At times we might show glimpses of these characteristics, but really, if we're honest, maybe at times more often than not, we don't see them in ourselves. When we read this next passage found in Exodus 34, and it's verses 1 through 7, we're going to notice some similarities to the last passage that we read. So it says, the Lord said to Moses, chisel out two stone tablets like the first one, and I'll write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. Man, Moses had a pretty bad day that day. I don't know if you remember that. But he came down from the mountain, and I don't think any of those attributes of God were really at the surface for him. He came down and saw what the Israelites were doing and got just a little bit angry, I think. Just had a little human moment. This was Moses. I like saying that because we look at people in the Bible, and this is in my notes, but we look at people in the Bible and we can easily remove ourselves from them because they're in the Bible. So they kind of go up on this pedestal. But at the end of the day, all these human beings, save Jesus, who are in the Bible, they experience the same emotions that you and I experience. So Moses came down and he got angry. And it wasn't righteous anger. He got angry. He smashed those tablets. What are you guys doing? My tablet's worth a little bit more than those stones, I think. My wife would kill me if I actually threw that on the ground. So, God had a second go at it. Be ready in the morning, and then come up on Mount Sinai. Present yourself to me on the top of the mountain. This is round two. Let's see if we can get it right this time. No one is to come with you or even be seen anywhere on the mountain. Not even the flocks or herds may graze in front of the mountain. So Moses chiseled out two stone tablets like the first ones and went up Mount Sinai early in the morning as the Lord had commanded him. And he carried the two stone tablets in his hands. Then the Lord came down in the cloud. After this act of anger, and God just spent, man, I don't know how hard it must be to write into stone, but I can't imagine how long that must have taken. And he just smashes the stone, and God was like, are you kidding me? Like, that took me like 5 hours. God came down in a cloud. And he stood with him. Talk about compassion. And he proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. I mean, he's a just God. We know that. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and the fourth generation. It'd be really nice to stop before that last verse where it talks about punishment. But if we're going to be real and understand God, we got to understand that there's consequences to our actions. But, I mean, that's a huge moment for Moses, at least in my mind. After having a less than godly moment, he admits it before God, and God says, come on, just come back up the mountain. I'm not done with you yet. I understand what took place. And at the end of the day, yes, I'm just, but I am more gracious, more compassionate, more understanding than I am someone who's going to stand over you in anger and judgment. And he walks in front of Moses. At the end of the day, God maintains his love for his people, regardless of our wickedness, our rebellion, our sin, our pigheadedness, where we just can't seem to learn it the first time. The amazing news is He shows compassion and mercy to those who don't deserve it. There's no conditions that are set forward to make us worthy of receiving that compassion. We don't have to go through any rituals or cleansings or kill anything. It's just there. It's just there. Some might say with verse 7, it doesn't sound compassionate to me. Like, how do we reconcile verse 6, where it's talking about compassion and love, and verse 7? How does that make any sense? Well, I got ahead of myself in the sermon, so I already know the answer. Part of love is discipline. The way I think about it is, if God didn't have these Ten Commandments and the other things that he sets out, showing us black and white, right and wrong, sinfulness, I wonder how devastated the world would be. How messed up would our lives be? How hurting would we be if we did not have these rules, these guidelines, not man-made rules, not religion, two completely different things. How messed up would our lives be? If I didn't teach my kids that it's wrong to do certain things, when they left the home and went into society, how difficult would life be for them? But because I love my kids so much that I start crying about it when I talk about it in front of people, I discipline them and I teach them right and wrong. Because that, at the end of the day, even though they don't always get it in the time, and nor do we when God is teaching us a lesson, that's love. As much as it is compassion being love, discipline is love. Many people look at the world around us, the suffering, the pain, the distress, they're all around us, and scoff at the idea that there's a compassionate God, a loving God, a God that cares for his creation. At the end of the day, it's true. Bad things happen all around us. Things happen that we can't understand. That we can't explain. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but I'm crying, so I have to explain why I'm crying. August 24th, 2017, I had a big brother, Philip Russell Knowles. 8 years older than me. And at 4 a.m. in the morning, he died. Just like that. I'm not going to dwell on this because I don't want to take up time. It's not part of my message, although it relates, I guess. Talk about trying to understand the love of God. It doesn't get much more difficult than that. I'm not saying that any suffering is greater or less than my suffering. Suffering is suffering is suffering is suffering. It's not a competition. But man, it sucks really bad. It hurts really bad for a long time. As you can see, I'm crying. But at the end of the day, I'm also crying because I've come to an understanding that even though it's hard to comprehend, my God is gracious. He is compassionate. He does understand. I don't have to have a detailed explanation as to why bad things happen. I can tell you one thing for sure, we're all human. The one thing we perfected is dying. At some point in life, we're going to die. Immortality does not exist. So people die. Bad things happen. It doesn't change the fact that God is God. It doesn't change the character of who God is. It's easy to get angry in those times with God. It's easy to get frustrated. It's easy to say, and it's understandable to say, God, where are you? Do you really love me? Are you with me? And God understands you saying that. But at the end of the day, it's true. God is compassionate. He offers comfort, peace, and hope in this life. He offers security through salvation, eternity with Him. He does this for people that have openly rejected and turned from Him. That's true compassion. That's true love. Isaiah chapter 49, verse 3-13 says, shout for joy, you heavens. Rejoice, you earth. Burst into song, you mountains. For the Lord comforts His people and will have compassion on His afflicted ones. It's important to note, I need a Kleenex. That's what's important to note. Sorry. If I'm going to get through this, I got to deal with the crying stuff too. It's important to note that this verse sits in the middle of a passage talking about the restoration of Israel. It predicts the ultimate restoration of God's people at Christ's second coming. It's not written in a time where Israel has surrendered to God. I mean, if you look through the books of the Judges, I mean, talk about people that just couldn't get it through their head. They were warned and warned and warned that you got to change, you got to do something different. They might shift a little bit, but they just kept on their rebellious track. This wasn't written to a people that got it. But yet, Isaiah prophesies about a promise of joy, a time of rejoicing, a bursting of song for the Lord to comfort His people. They didn't deserve it in the least. It predicts the ultimate restoration of God's people. And we're still believing for Israel's restitution to this day. Here's the hope that we find in this verse. In the midst of pain and despair, rebellion, we're sure that there's a day when everything will be made right for those that trust God. As we all know too well, there's a promise of eternity that looks pretty good. It's pretty exciting. A promise of eternity with the Lord that hopefully gives you comfort and hope. It means that all of our struggles and all of our problems one day will go away. Here on this side, it isn't going to be rainbows and butterflies. But we still have a hope because of the compassionate love of God. A hope that hopefully helps you get through the realities of living on this side of eternity. A hope that God knows you, he sees you, and he really cares. He really is compassionate. He has compassion for each and every one of us. Second Samuel 24-14 says, David said to God, "I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord." Sorry, he said to Gad, not God. Gad's a person. I said God. Totally changes the story when you use the right name. David said to Gad, "I am in deep distress. Let us fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is great. But do not let me fall into human hands." I find that interesting. As I conclude, I find that interesting that he uses this language. In Psalms 121, 1-2, he says, "I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth." Let me tell you why I find it interesting that David used language like this. Because we're talking about a guy who didn't necessarily have to see life that way. You look through the story of David, he hit quite a few road bumps. I think about the story of Ziklag, where after coming back from war, they come back to their town, David and his army. Not only is it burnt to the ground, but their families are nowhere to be seen. It's not really something to celebrate. That's pretty devastating in life. But yet David had this understanding that God is beyond and above those things, that God is sovereign even through the most difficult times of life. And so he's able to encourage others to fall into the hands of God, to find rest, to find peace. Peace that's not of this world, that we're not necessarily going to naturally find in each other, but you can fall into the hands of God. I picture at the end of a long day where you've been on your feet all day, just been go, 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 and you get home, you have your favorite meal, meatballs, and then just fall into bed and just able to relax and let the stress of the day go. When we look at this metaphor of falling into the hands of God, that's what I picture every time. Just thank you, God. So to finish, I want to do something maybe a little bit different. Something that you're not used to always doing in church. But there's a point to it. You see, it's important to strategize for war. When a general knows that he or she is facing a tough battle, they don't just kind of hope for the best. "Oh, we got to go fight tomorrow. Let's just wing it. Let's just see what happens." No, when they're about to go into battle and they know that war's coming, a general comes up with a strategy, a plan for what's to come. Or space is my favorite thing. You'll learn that over time. I love space. So with NASA, when they were launching the space shuttles regularly, they didn't just kind of hope that they could reach orbit, that everything would go perfectly, that there wouldn't be anything that went wrong along the way. No, NASA is the king of backups for backups for backups for backups. When they were planning for space flights, they didn't just wing it. They made sure they had contingency plans. They made sure they had strategies just in case something went wrong on the way to space, because going to space is really hard. And so, just as a general comes up with a strategy, or NASA comes up with contingencies and and plans for just in case something goes wrong. It's important for us to do the same sort of thing in our lives. Not just assuming that, well, I have a relationship with God, so if something bad hits me, I'm good to go. I can take whatever life throws at me. Trust me, I know it's not that easy. It's not that easy. I'm a pastor. Been a pastoring off and on for 10 years. And when I lost my brother, I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't have a strategy for facing something like that in my life. And so, I have two verses up on the screen. And what I want you to do is look at these verses, and I'm going to play quietly on the piano. I want you to reflect on these verses. And the first thing I want you to do is put them into your own terms, into words that make sense in your brain, something that's going to stick in your head. So the next time that you're facing discouragement, you're questioning the love of God, when maybe Satan is throwing things at you and causing you to question that God is there, these verses come to mind. Just do that for a moment. Let the verses just sink into your heart. So now that you've hopefully in some way committed these to your heart, your mind, to memory, maybe you even jot these verses down on a paper so that you can go and write them out later. The next thing I want you to do, this is the battle plan, is to think of three practical ways that you can look to the Lord in times of trouble. Maybe even write it down or text it to yourself. Or this is the battle plan. See, the Christian walk isn't just a walk of chance, random actions, lackadaisical living, to be a child of God, to have relationship with God, to experience everything that He has for you. It requires intentionality. It requires prioritizing the things of God above the things of man. It requires recreating habits and plans in your life so that your life becomes God-centered instead of life-centered. And so doing things like this doesn't just leave your Christian walk up to chance. Doesn't just leave the thoughts of your mind to chance. Because a mind left untamed is a mind that's going to not easily drift to God in times of struggle. But living a Christian walk means having intentional plans of, God, I'm going to trust You. I'm going to, even when I don't experience You, know that You are a God that is defined by peace, by grace, by love, by compassion. Those three practical ways, that's your battle plan. Those two verses, amongst all the other verses that are found in the Bible that talk about God's character of love and compassion, that's your sword against the enemy. That he can't get a foothold in your life, and so discontent in your life when you're facing struggles. So at the end of the day, as I've repeated and repeated over this evening, our God is a God of love and compassion. How great is our God? Sing with me, how great is our God? Oh, we'll see how great, how great is our God. Stand with me and worship. How great is our God? Sing with me, how great is our God? All will see how great, how great is our God. The name above of the situation of life, I will sing. You're the name above all names, worthy of all praise. My heart will sing, how great, how great is our God. Great.
praise you, Lord. Praise you. Thank you. Hallelujah. Thank you, Pastor Graham, for encouraging message and for helping us to fix our eyes once again on the Lord. Thank you for that meditative moment to really think on how to be prepared for those moments.